The hour have come and gone already. We're going to go ahead and begin our COGFA meeting for this day where we learn about our financial situation. And before we call roll, I'll just say good morning to Dan Long, who's also in here. And the first report that he hasn't chaired, so no criticism accepted. So I would ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Representative Burke. Representative Davidsmeyer. Senator Kaler.
Here.
Co-Chair Pritchard.
Here.
Representative Riley.
Here.
Senator Rose. Senator Sims. Co-Chair Staines.
Here.
Senator Severson.
Here.
Senator Tracy.
Here.
Representative Wheeler.
Okay, we... I don't know if six is a quorum, but we're not acting on anything today. I would first like to welcome my co-chair, Heather Staines, who is not new to this committee. She's served on it before, but is replacing the co-chair, Donnie Trotter. Would you care to say anything this morning?
Only that I'll never be able to fill Donnie Trotter's shoes, but I'm happy to be here.
We also have some new members that have also been on here before. Senator Tracy, we're welcoming you this morning. And care to say anything? Very good. We'll just keep moving then. And I believe that's all of our new people, except for our new executive director, Clayton Klenke, who is going to give us an update, first of all, on the Moody's report. So I'll let you begin.
All right, thank you. Good morning. I just wanted to start out first just giving you a little bit of my background, since this is my first meeting as the new executive director of the commission. I know I had the opportunity to work with several of you over the years, but I wanted to just take a minute and talk about a little bit of my history with the General Assembly. I began my employment with the General Assembly in 1996 as a committee and budget analyst with the House Republican staff. And while on staff, I worked on a variety of committees over the years, but over time, my specialty really became focused more on human services related issues and human services budgets. In 2011, I was named as the Director of Appropriations for the House Republican Caucus, and I know I've worked with a number of you in that capacity over the years. This last August of 2017, the legislative leaders appointed me to the position of Executive Director at the Commission. And while I enjoyed my time as an Appropriation Director, I certainly would say that coming over to COGFA was one of the few opportunities I would have pursued, and mainly that is because I was familiar with the work that was done by the COGFA staff. I've always considered their work to be very reliable and some of the best in state government or the private sector for that matter as well. But that's just a little bit on my background, and the next thing I wanted to do was just go over a little bit, provide a brief summary overview of the Moody's Analytics State of Illinois Economic Report, which is included in your packet. And I wanted to do this just, I didn't want to get into the numbers as much on this as provide just kind of a broad overview of some of the basic themes in that forecast, because I think that provides a good segue to our actual numbers that Jim will go over in terms of economic data and our revenue forecast, both our update for FY18 and our look forward to FY19. So a copy of the Moody's report is included in your materials, and I would just mention that for other members of the public that are interested in that report, it's available on the COGFA website as well. The economic forecast which Moody has provided in recent years for the commission, they've provided a rather pessimistic look at Illinois' prospects for economic growth. The report this year continues to find some significant obstacles that are in the way for growth, but it also identifies some positive developments over the last year and some indicators that provide for the near-term future, in the near-term future, some possibilities for some growth. As identified in the report, the Illinois economy has shown some modest growth in recent years, and one positive indicator that they mention in their report is that August of 2017 was the first month in nearly 2 years that no Illinois metro area was in recession. In the long term, Illinois does have also many factors weighing in our favor in terms of the possibility for future growth. Chief among these would be the fact that businesses are attracted to Illinois' well-educated and trained workforce, and the fact that Illinois has transportation hubs that help to link products to our consumers. Unfortunately, on most economic indicators, Illinois does not compare favorably to other Midwestern states or the nation as a whole. Employment in Illinois has shown some modest growth, but this growth lags employment gains in the Midwest and in the U.S. Illinois had a 4.7% increase in employment over the last 5 years. That's half of the national average. The labor force in Illinois has seen some declines in the last 5 years, and that's partly due to our aging workforce. Income levels in Illinois have been helped by an above-average reliance on interest and dividend income, but out-migration and worsening population trends have limited our overall personal income growth. In the near term, Moody's forecasts that we will see some building momentum in growth over the next several quarters, even though this growth will fall short of what's seen in other states. Part of this growth is fed by strength in our professional and business sectors. There is good demand for Illinois goods that provides a floor for our manufacturing base, but they do see limited growth in our manufacturing payrolls. In the near term and the long term, poor population trends and state financial difficulties are seen as tempering some of that momentum that we have for growth. As part of the report, Moody's looked at the impact of the recent federal tax reforms. And overall, both in the near term and the long term, Moody's kind of looks at the impact in Illinois as being one of the smallest impacts you'll see in any state, both on the positives and the negatives. And part of that is because Illinois has a higher average share of high income earners, so they do get some benefits from the new tax brackets, but then they also see offsets from the lower deductions for state and local taxes and mortgage interest. In the long term, Moody's sees our business and professional services as continuing to drive our growth. They see growth on the healthcare front with our aging population. They look at tourism as a sector that has grown considerably in the past, but may not be able to maintain that momentum. As far as negatives for the long term, Moody's mentions in their report that 98% of the variance in Illinois' economy is tied to factors in the national economy. So in a way, the national economy kind of pulls us along, but in many aspects, Illinois lags the national averages. Focused on those difficulties that we have just in terms of our state finances and those demographics and population trends that tend to lower our personal growth on personal income. Household balance sheets, Moody's mentions in their report that they have rebounded some from the lows in recent years, but we still lag the national averages. So I guess to sum their argument, their facts up a little bit, you know, they do forecast some moderate growth in the short term for a few quarters. However, that growth will be seen as tapering off. Some of the major obstacles in the way that cause that tapering would be the difficulties we have as a state financially and the population trends where we're seeing many residents leave for other states. You know, originally this was more like, they mentioned that Indiana we saw a lot of out-migration to. Now it's become more like Florida and Texas. And because of declines in international immigration. We're not backfilling that population. That's just my brief overview of what was in the report. I'm sure you guys will want to digest it a little bit more, and I'll be available to talk to you more on that report if you'd like. And I just would like to now segue over to our actual PowerPoint, where we'll take some of that base economic data, and Jim will go through how we're seeing the numbers come in Illinois.
Good morning, members. I'll be going through the handout here. And Clayton mentioned a lot of the...
Jim, sure. Before you begin, is there any questions on the Moody report?
Yes, sir.
Representative Riley?
At the end, you mentioned Texas and Florida. Did you say, I didn't quite hear you. Did you say we were losing population to them, or they were losing population just like we were?
Right. No, that we were losing population to them. Moody's mentions in their report that initially when we were moving, or when we were losing population, it was to states closer like Indiana. Now we're losing more to Texas and Florida.
But weren't we always doing that? I mean, essentially, some of the Rust Belt states weren't we losing population to them, especially Florida?
Oh, I think that I'm sure that's probably the case. I think one of the changes they've seen recently is a change in who we're losing to. Before, maybe we were losing more of our aging population, whereas now we're losing more of our working population.
Thank you.
Jim, would you introduce yourself?
And sure.
A thumbnail background to your experience.
Jim Mashinsky, the revenue manager at COGFA. I've been here for 26 years, most of it in this position. Clayton went over essentially the same themes that I will be. I'll try to augment some of the economics with some other slides here before we get to the actual revenue forecast. But we wanted to provide you with some economic observations, measures, and expectations. On page 5, we'll start by one of the broadest economic measures, and that's the national GDP. You can see since the recession's end how we've had essentially all positive quarters with the few exceptions there going negative. The recovery, like all recoveries, are characterized by fits and starts. For fiscal year or calendar year 17, growth was about 2.3%. That is an improvement over the 16 number of 1.5, but a bit of a slowing from 15's 2.9 and 14's 2.6. In aggregate, next calendar year, most forecasters are looking somewhere in the neighborhood of 2.7 to 2.9% in terms of GDP growth. Page 6 illustrates the Purchasing Managers Index. Now, this index is an indicator of economic health of the manufacturing sector. It includes new orders, inventory levels, production, supplier deliveries, and employment environment. And it's an index, so anything over 50 is considered expansion, anything under is considered contraction. And as you can see, over the last couple of years, we actually have seen an improvement, not only nationally, but also when you look at it via the Chicago's Purchasing Managers Index. Now, the non-manufacturing index, which is on the next page and comprises probably 80% of the actual economy, is a little more stable, in part simply due to its size. Again, any measure over 50 is considered expansion. Anything below that is contraction. Since the recovery began, we've been right between that 50 and 55 on the index. In fact, the latest measure actually had us improving up to a 60. So again, that bodes well for the feel that the economy is at least improving on a modest level. One of the fears, if you turn on any talking head show, financial networks, is the fear of inflation. On page 8, you'll see both the core inflation rate, which is the red line, versus the overall, which is the blue. And really, we've been fairly tame. In fact, the inflation levels have essentially been right around the 2%, and right now a little bit under 2% for the recent period of time. And the Fed would like to see that actually increase a little bit, closer to the 2% level. When people hear inflation, usually there's a negative connotation to that. But really, some inflation is a component to a healthy economy. the bottom chart there on page 8 shows that Chicago, its CPI is tracking very closely to that of the nation. Again, right a little bit under that 2% mark, which would be the goal. What might be a precursor to some actual price inflation can be seen on page 9. If you look at the producer price index, and it shows that at the wholesale level, there has been some increases over the last year or so. Perhaps this hasn't made its way through the chain down to the end consumer, but there may be some price pressures that manufacturers and sellers will eventually have to build into their product. Another component in terms of inflation and its view is on page 10, which is the 10-year Treasury rate. And as you can see, over the last 7 or 8 months, there's been a pretty good increase in the 10-year Treasury rate. Now, the scale of this chart maybe makes it look a little more acute than what it is, because we're looking at very low levels here, 1.5 being the lowest measure, up to the 2.75. So visually it may have more of an impact than an actuality. But just this morning, new Fed Chairman Jerome Powell pledged to strike a balance between the risk of an overheating economy and the need to keep growth on track. And as such, the central bank would still probably go ahead with the gradual interest rates in the future, whether that's 3, maybe one more. It's still to be determined, but the goal is to bring price inflation to 2% on a sustained basis. Page 11, everyone's always interested in the employment picture. And the next couple of slides provide you with a little information on the nation as well as Illinois. In terms of national, based on the household survey and the establishment survey, we recovered the jobs that we lost in the recession after about 5 years. Now, the household survey is just that. It's a survey of approximately 60,000 households, and they're asked, do you have a job? Do you not have a job? Are you seeking employment or in the labor force? Whereas the establishment survey is more the payroll survey, and they ask over 144,000 non-farm establishments actual payroll information, so the data is considered a little harder. It does not include the self-employed individuals, though. As we turn to page 12 for Illinois specific employment, you'll notice that the charts look similar, but in terms of the establishment survey, it took Illinois approximately 3 years longer to return to the same employment levels prior to the recession, and under the household survey measure, we've yet to regain those lost jobs. So that is one difference between the two. Page 13 shows the unemployment rates, comparing Illinois with that of the nation. Right before the recession began back in 07, you'll see that we synced up very tightly with that of the nation. And then as the recession began, and then now over the recovery period, we've tended to trend between 0.4 to as much as a little over 1.5, I think, was the worst unemployment rate, higher than the nation. Now, in terms of forecasting, we consider the unemployment rate to be more of a weaker indicator. We're more concerned with the actual number of people working, since they're the ones who actually create your income taxes and such. But clearly, unemployment rate is always something that that people tend to want to hear about. And I guess on page 14, this maybe does a better job than the previous chart and probably echoes some comments that Clayton made in terms of Illinois' continued underperformance relative to the nation as well as the Midwest. That's what this bar chart represents. We're the black, Midwest is red, and the national economy is blue. And as you can see, over this 10-year period, we have always exceeded both the Midwest as well as the national measures in terms of the unemployment rate. Some years are better than others, but as you can see, over the last 4 or 5, we are consistently higher than our neighbors as well as the nation as a whole. Page 15 actually gets into some of the economic forecasts. This shows 3 different scenarios. These are provided to the commission by one of our econometric firms, IHS Markit. The baseline forecast, which has a 65% chance of occurrence, would have GDP continuing to grow at about 2.7% over the forecast horizon, about 0.5% higher than what happened in 2017. The pessimistic view, which is shown by that red dotted line there, would have us actually going into contraction for the second half of 2018 before recovering over 2% in the out period. And then finally, an optimistic scenario would have stronger growth over fiscal year 18, up over 4%, before moderating in the out year. Page 16 are the actual measures related to that baseline forecast. Now, these are national. Again, GDP is projected to increase somewhat from 2.3 to 2.7% over the forecast horizon. And then I always like to look down below the personal consumption. Now, these are in current dollars. Increases from 4.5 to 4.8% in calendar year 18. And the unemployment rate for the nation continues to fall, actually going down to 3.6. In 19. And once you get to that level, I guess most would say that you're at or near full employment. So that's the national measures. Let's take a look at Illinois forecasts in terms of what Global Insight or IHS Market anticipates. Page 17 shows the real estate product, which we'll use kind of as a proxy for GDP growth. We are lower in terms of absolute growth, but when you look at the actual trends here, 1% to 1.8 to 2%, there certainly is a modicum of improvement there. In terms of employment, total employment, we go from the 0.5% in 17, increasing gradually to 0.9% and then 1.5% in 2019. That stubborn population trend continues to decline somewhat in 18 and is essentially flat in 19. Personal income has some decent growth there, up to 3.8% in 18 and 19 almost 5%. Private housing starts are very volatile, so I don't really know if you can read much into that, but even they have got some positive measures. And our unemployment rate is anticipated to be considerably higher than the nation, but in relative terms actually will fall to about 4.4%. Page 18, there's a lot of numbers on it. I'm not going to get into too much. We've done the analytics on this a couple of times in our monthly briefings, and we'll probably do one in the near future. But what we've done here is put a historical table together by employment sector over the last 6 or 7 years. And on the bottom, we've done the same with average weekly earnings. And then that bottom blue line there essentially aggregates both of those measures into an overall change. And you can see that in 16 and 17, overall, based upon actual number of people working as well as their wages, we're only plodding along around 2%. We think that given the economic forecast that most of the firms are anticipating, that should increase at least modestly over the forecast period, probably getting closer to what we saw a few years ago up in that 3% area. So that's it on the economic side of the presentation, and now we're going to move directly into the revenues and their forecasts. Page 20, before we get into the COGFA's actual bottom line estimates here, I think it's important to kind of revisit where we were when this fiscal year began. So we put together this table on page 20. The enacted budget was based on a forecast of $36.410 billion, and that included about $5.479 billion of legislative changes, such as the higher income tax rates. There were some loophole closures. There was also some offsetting exemption increases. It included $300 million for the sale of the Thompson Center. And there were some other, the 10% retention of the LGDF from locals. There were a number of things that entered into that. The bottom line was the $36.4 billion revenue number. Since that time, we need to make some additional, we need to make some adjustments to that based on additional resources that have become available and was part of the enacted budget. For example, fund sweeps totaling $275 million that was actually part of the budget legislation, but it was not built into the 36.4 because there was the option for that money to be put into a non-general fund, pay down group insurance. We've actually seen that money come into GRF, so we now have to account for that. Interfund borrowing. The enacted budget allowed for $1.2 billion in interfund borrowing. But as of right now, it only appears that we'll probably get about $600 million in fiscal year 18. We'll get to the fact the governor wants to propose an additional $600 million for 19. Total value doesn't change, $1.2 billion, just that that would be spread over two fiscal years rather than one. Then, of course, we allowed for $6 billion in bond sales to pay down the old bills. So that took place in November. Of that $6 billion, $2.5 billion was deposited into general revenue to pay down the old Medicaid bills. The action of doing so generated $1.206 billion in federal reimbursements. So those two elements combined increase resources to general revenue by 3.706, which when you compare it to the interfund borrowing and the fund sweeps, we need to adjust the enacted budget by $4.581 billion to get to a new modified enacted budget amount of 40.991. And then that will be the figure that we'll be comparing our forecast to in a second. Are there any questions on that? I know there was a lot thrown out there. Page 21, I think it just tries to explain what I just did. So before we get to the actual numerical forecast, let's take a quick look on page 22. This is a chart that shows on a month-by-month basis how revenues have performed relative to the same period of the prior year. Now, it's not a surprise that almost immediately, because of the higher income tax rates, we started to see some growth. So in July, it was a little over 200, and then as the fiscal year went on, we saw some higher values as the full tax rate was implemented, because there's always a timing lag initially. In November, you'll see that large surge. That bar there indicates the federal reimbursements that came in as a result of the borrowing and the pay down of the old Medicaid bills. The actual values associated with that chart can be shown on page 23. And I'll just
before you get go there, sure. Jim, we have a question on the previous page.
Real quick, I just sort of got caught up here. $300 million. Compared to the our total budget, $36.7 billion, is not a lot of money. But that was the assumption on what the governor thought that he could sell the Thompson Center for?
That's correct.
Okay. How do you feel? I mean, that's essentially speculation. So this was a projection based on at least what they thought they would get from it. And as it turns out, didn't get anything from it because we didn't sell it. So did that change, you know, your forecast going forward, or did that have any?
Well, we'll get to that in a second. That we are removing that from our 18 forecast.
Gotcha. Thank you.
The same as what GOMB did in the budget as presented a couple of weeks ago. So you're correct. That is an assumption that's changed. Year to date, again, page 23. I'll just go to the percentages of some of the higher valued economic sources here. Personal income tax, we're up almost 33%. Obviously, this is the result of the higher income tax rate. We've also seen some growth associated with timing elements related to the SALT deduction going away, and some individuals had the incentive to increase and get those quarterly payments in at the end of the year so that they could get the last year of the full SALT deduction. There was also some repatriation money that came back in as a result of some changes that took place, from what I understand, a number of years ago. That is more of a windfall rather than the acceleration which is associated with the SALT deduction money. We don't have a precise breakout of the value of that, but clearly there was some of that that occurred year-to-date and as part of that 33% increase. Corporate income tax is up substantially, about 93%. It's a combination of much better corporate profits, a higher corporate income tax rate, and there's also some timing elements related to the ledger conversion system that took place at the Department of Revenue last year that had the effect of kind of subduing receipts last year. All of those components combined drive that much higher percentage increase. And then I'll mention sales taxes. We're up only 0.7%. Sales taxes have been very stubborn, and it likely relates to the fact that inflation has been so tame. In fact, when we were discussing with Moody Analytics, they indicated that they actually had to adjust some of their state retail sales and tax expectations because of that. And I think that's probably what is in large part driving our poor sales taxes right now. We know we're going to pick up a little bit because of a fund distribution change that happened last year with Department of Revenue, about $160 million. That won't recur this year. So on a year-over-year basis, we will pick up some growth there. But that aside, we're still fairly weak in terms of sales taxes, and we're hoping with the expectation that inflation will increase at least modestly, that we'll start to see a little better return on the sales tax line as well. And again, I guess we'll go down to federal sources. We're up $2.5 billion. Really, that's as a result of the bond proceeds being used for Medicaid bills and the subsequent reimbursement. So the actual revenue forecast can be found on page 24. And that forecast, once everything is accounted for...
Just a moment, please. We have another question from...
Sorry.
No, thanks, Jim. Just a quick question. Why the corporate franchise tax and fees down the 15%?
Why is what?
Corporate franchise tax and fees down.
Why is it down?
Significantly. Yeah, 15% decrease.
Being a smaller source, there is fluctuations from month to month, and even though we're 7 months through the 7 months through the fiscal year, there's probably a timing element there that we think is probably going to recover. When we look at it and compared to next or to last fiscal year, it's pretty stable. It was $207 million last year. Anticipation is for $203 million this year. I think it's more timing at this point than anything. So again, the forecast of the commission for this fiscal year is $40.604 billion. That does include $600 million in interfund borrowing, as well as $2.5 billion from the bond fund proceeds. If you were to strip away that, then the figure would be a 37.504 number. Now, we're going to compare those figures to the modified enacted budget that I just explained, and you can see the differential is $387 million. 300 of that is what Representative Riley mentioned, is the sale of the Thompson Center is no longer part of our forecast. So if you were to strip away that, the estimates are very close, separated only by $87 million. The income taxes overall, there's very little variation there, $11 million. Sales taxes, I kind of went into that. Sales taxes have underperformed relative to expectations, so there is a fall off expected there. Other sources, it's the net of the $300 million being taken out, but that's partially offset by $100 million from SCRS prior year overpayment. So those two kind of balance out, but it's still a $200 million downward adjustment that needs to be done. But, you know, overall, the forecasts are quite similar, especially if you take out that Thompson Center, or control for the Thompson Center. 25 is just more narrative.
We have a question.
Sure.
Senator?
Help me understand the situation with sales tax again. And are we seeing any kind of a loss because of internet sales and that?
I don't believe internet sales is, in this instance, this is the state component of sales taxes. By most measures, the large Amazons of the world and the large online retailers collect and remit sales taxes. The Department of Revenue did an update on an analysis a year or two ago, and the values really aren't that great. I want to say and they came on, so it's probably less than $100 million. And this would have been part of trends, so I don't think what we're seeing now, maybe a part of that might be related to online sales. But, you know, there's not much you can buy anymore when you go to the checkout online that it doesn't at least apply the state sales tax rate.
And there is a issue there with what goes, gets passed on to local government. So I do.
That's
hear
a
that.
Separate issue.
That's a big issue for us. But so I guess what I'm led to believe is that just overall sales are down, and that's
and when we were talking to Moody's, it was kind of dumbed down, but it was basically it isn't that people are buying less stuff. It's just that the stuff they're buying really hasn't gone up in price. I mean, when you can walk through Sam's and buy a big screen 65-inch TV for about half of what you could buy it for a couple of years ago, you know, that kind of stuff shows up. And the fact that inflation has been under 2% now for a couple of years,
Our answer to this is inflation. Is that
and Ben made the comment, too, that auto sales certainly impact on these numbers. We've seen auto sales the last year or so significantly drop off, and they usually comprise around 15% or so of total state sales taxes. Forecasts are for the next couple of years, I think, to go from 17.2 billion units down to 16.8 and even 16.5. So that also has an
impact. Is that to be interpreted as an overall of a dampening of our economic activity in the state?
No, I think it's just a matter of after the recession, there were a number of incentives for people to purchase automobiles, and once that demand is satisfied, there's just no need to go out there and continue to purchase another vehicle. It's just kind of the cyclical nature of auto sales.
I'm just kind of baffled by that, but I'll continue to watch it. Thank you.
Page 27, I believe, will now compare COGFA's estimate for 18 with that of the governor's GOMB, which was outlined in the budget book a couple of weeks ago. Overall, our forecast is slightly higher than that of GOMB, up by $115 million. The income taxes are only differing by $26 million. We're somewhat higher in our estimate of corporate income tax, but a little bit lower in our forecast for personal income tax. Sales tax, our outlook is a little bit more conservative, and I kind of outlined the reasons why. The year-to-date numbers just do not support rising to the level that GOMB is utilizing, at least in our opinion. All other state sources were a little bit higher, $58 million. That reflects primarily two items. One is the estate tax, in which we think that the state valuations, given the market conditions, continue to allow for growth. And then also on interest income for the state, we're considerably higher than they are, reflecting year-to-date changes. Federal sources were up $138 million, and this really comprises the overall difference between us and the Bureau. Year-to-date, and utilizing very conservative forecasts over the remainder of the fiscal year, our federal number should easily be met. In fact, I would not be surprised to see that number exceeded by $200 to $300 million once all is said and done. We don't want to take that big of a leap right now because obviously actual spending on reimbursable Medicaid bills, which isn't controlled by us, you know, the comptroller is the one who makes the call what bills are paid and when. But clearly there's upward pressure even on our estimate. So we would view their estimate as overly conservative. Again, overall, we're a difference by 0.3%. This year, we're the higher of the two. As we move to next year, I'll actually show you where we're a little bit lower, almost in the same ballpark. Page 28 gives a more refined accounting of those differences. As I mentioned, we're a little bit lower in our estimate of personal income tax, a little bit higher in corporate, a little bit lower in sales, and then the federal number, we're about $138 million higher. But overall, $115 million difference. While a lot of money, certainly, in these times, mathematically, it's not a significant difference between the two forecasts. Moving forward into fiscal year 19, now that we've laid the groundwork for the 18 base, on page 19 it shows the commission's forecast stands at $37.865 billion. Now that is a fall off of $2.739 billion from the previous year, but that large decline is solely attributed to the bond sale proceeds that occurred in 18. If we were to strip that away, then you'd want to look at the reduction of $239 million, which in and of itself is overstated because it includes about $1.2 billion in federal reimbursements related to that bond sale receded in 18 that will not repeat in 19. And that's where you see the $1.008 billion year-over-year loss in federal sources. If you were to control for that additional reimbursement in 18 and look just at federal source base, we would actually have $198 million in growth for federal sources. So there's a lot of you have to kind of know what numbers you're looking at here to get a true feel for it, but certainly on a year-over-year basis, it would give the indication of a fall-off in revenues, but that overshadows an anticipated improvement in the larger economic-related sources such as income and sales, whereas in income taxes, the net is expected to increase $545 million, sales taxes up to $179 million, and all other sources, $277 million. The reason for that is that Thompson Center comes back. You know, it's the revenue source that just keeps on giving. And so that's moving. That's moving. I think it moved from what 14 to 15 to 16 to 17, and now it's moving into 19. So that $300 million makes up that $277 increase there for all other state sources. Transfers in is expected to fall, $232. That's simply the consequence of the $275 million in fund sweeps or fund reallocations, I guess is the new politically correct word that's being used. So when all those factors are taken into account, you get to that overall forecast of $37.865 billion. Now, there are a couple assumptions within that, and we've talked about one of them before. Currently, the $1.2 billion in short-term borrowing by statute can only take place in fiscal year 18. The governor proposes, and for now, we will incorporate that into our forecast, that while the $1.2 billion doesn't change, it will be spread over 2 years, $600 million this year, $600 million next year. If that isn't allowed to happen, then you would have to make that adjustment in next year's revenues. But then again, if it doesn't happen, maybe there would be a bigger push at the end of this fiscal year to try to get as much as you can. So right now, to make it easy to compare our forecast with the Bureau, we thought we would just go ahead and mimic that, put the $600 million in each of those two fiscal years. The other item that you must be aware of, and this is discussed on page 31, is the current forecast does assume that we will continue at the current level of LGDF less 10%. So, again, this is being proposed by the governor. At this point in time, for the ease of comparison, we will also utilize that assumption that the state will continue to keep that 10% of the LGDF distribution. If that does not occur and it goes back to the full 100%, then we would have to reduce the forecast by $130 million. That's the value of that 10% retention by the state. So just so that everybody is aware of that, that would take a legislative change for that, for those revenues to be retained in fiscal year 19. So comparing our forecast with that of GOMB, on page 32, you'll see that while in fiscal year 18, we were $115 million higher, for fiscal year 19, we're $99 million lower. And that's a reflection of being slightly lower on our forecast of income taxes. We continue to be a little bit lower in the personal, but a little bit higher in corporate. And then for sales taxes, really the differential of $76 million is related to 18's difference, because our growth rate actually is a quarter click higher than I believe what they're utilizing. We're saying 2.25% growth in sales. I think they're at 2%. So both estimates are very close, very conservative, but differ just slightly. All other state sources, we continue to be higher in our forecast for inheritance and interest income. Transfers in is very similar. And for now, we will utilize the forecast that GOMB put forth for federal sources. Obviously, that can change. It's based upon appropriation levels, spending priorities, and a host of other things. So it's very difficult for us to come up with something that's dramatically different than what's being assumed in the budget thus far. But that could obviously change. So when you look at the $99 million difference this year and compare it with the $115 million from 18, if you add those 2 years together, the differential is only, I think, $16 million between the 2 years combined. So mathematically, the estimates are essentially the same. Everyone sees the underlying economic direction, or at least the hoped-for economic direction, to be continued slow growth, perhaps a modicum of improvement as we go forward in the forecast period. And there's really not a substantial difference, I think, at all in terms of the outlook economically or revenue or related revenue-wise. That's all I have. The remainder is just a lot of comparison tables and historical stuff.
Thank you. Are there any questions from members? Representative Davis-Meyer.
So really quick, if you go back to page 13, when we talk about unemployment rates, Illinois versus the United States, we're following that trend. But earlier we heard about Moody's saying we're not necessarily increasing employment. We're losing people out of the employment market because of age and possibly workers leaving the state for greener pastures. So, that's basically what Moody's was saying. Is that what you think we're seeing?
I think what they were trying to discuss was our demographic problems that we see. In terms of the actual forecast for employment, essentially they were spot on with what we had discussed. 0.5% in 17, 0.8% increase in 18, 0.7% for 19. So it isn't that we're actually losing anticipated employment. It's just how the transition in our demographics is headed, and the danger sign is, and Clayton had indicated this, when you start to lose your wage earning age brackets, when people retire and go to Florida, who can blame them, right? But if individuals are leaving Illinois because of greener pastures, right, job-related pastures, now that becomes a larger economic impact to the state.
Any other questions? The clerk will note that we've had two members join us during this presentation, Representatives Burke and Davis-Meyer. The final item that I'd like to bring up today, and thank you, Clayton and Jim, for your presentations. The final item would be our next COGFA meeting will be in April. We are still trying to ascertain a date that is convenient for most people, but we're looking at around the 23rd of April if you want to tentatively mark your calendars for that. More information will be shared later. And this will be dealing with the State Employees Group Insurance Program for FY19. If there's no other business to come before us, then this session of COGFA will come to a close. Thank you.